Beta Caller for Thursday, August 4th, 2011. We have the host, Paul Runyon, that's myself. And tonight we're focusing on paraphernalia and recent DVDs, books, and ceremonies in that wonderful pagan magical tradition. Now, our very special guest tonight will be Farfaria's avatrix, that's female avatar, Jo Carson, and she'll be calling in from her Northern California woodland retreat, where she and her Farfarians have established a beautiful rustic Farfarian library. Jo describes Fifi thus: although a small group, Farfaria has been a founding inspiration in the resurgence of Western paganism since the 1960s. Fred Adams and Svetlana Buturin created Farfaria to be, in their words, a paradisial fellowship with a loving celebration of wilderness mysteries with fairy style, and courtly elegance, and refinement, and grace. And the great work of Farfaria is the lyrical unification of ecology, artistry, mythology, and liturgy. Farfaria offers a poetic liturgy and altruistic theology of holy wilderness. Farfaria has been featured in many books, which may seem surprising since it's such a small group. Farfaria is primarily a fairy faith, meaning the earth embodied as the magic maiden or the merry maiden, a youthful girl goddess whose time has finally come. So, tune in and find out how goddess-worshipping neo-paganism got started here in America and how it's still going. Beverly Corey, this Farfaria experience is something that I treasure. I first met Fred and Svetlana in 1969 when I was just getting started. I just founded the OTA. We just got it started, hadn't even incorporated yet. And that's when I found Fred and Svetlana, and I'll tell the story of how that came about in a little bit. But tonight, we're going to primarily talk about this most recent visit that we made up to Northern California, up north of San Francisco, visiting Jo Carson, who has been a friend of mine and associate Farfarian for, well, ever since 1970, and Jo has she's the president of Farfaria, and she has preserved Fred's vast corpus of artwork and knowledge and his writings and his wonderful magical system, and Svetlana's wonderful rituals that the two of them, and it wasn't all Fred. I mean, Svetlana had a lot to do with this too. And the whole poetic, artistic aspect of all of this. And Jo has done a wonderful job of preserving it and reconstructing it. And one of the things that we were really, really impressed with up there in Northern California was that she and her family have this wonderful rustic home in the woods with a nice, beautiful creek running right by and these rustic appearance of the buildings. And she established this Farfarian library with Fred's books, and then these books are precious. I mean, these are books I don't think you're going to be able to find on. I don't think you can Google these. I think that these, Fred collected some very, very rare books on the goddess and the history of the mystery tradition from ancient Greece and Egypt. And so Jo and her husband, they got this old gypsy wagon. This is a kind of a trailer, but it's really a gypsy wagon, like an old carnival gypsy wagon. They added more on the roof to it, and they made that into the library. So it's kind of like a fairyland. You go and it's kind of nestled right there in the woods next to the henge. By the way, Joe's henge that we did a ceremony around is made of volcanic basalt. That's similar to obsidian, but basalt's the rock. And these are the same, by the way, the same type of rocks that are used to make the city of Nan Madol out there in the Pacific. And so these basalt prisms are erected. They're about 3 feet high, each one of them, and they're erected around the perimeter 12-foot hinge, and this makes just a perfect ceremonial hinge. So we had a Farfarian ceremony, and the Joe had written and put together, and it was really, in many ways, going back 30 years in time, and recapturing the spirit of Farfarian. I was really, really fascinated and inspired. And Joe has a Farfarian group up there, and mostly ladies, and very much very wonderful group. And I think that the Farfarian influence that we really, really should not forget it. And Farfaria, I don't know whether we're going to be able to ever, in this particular climate, whether we can get it going again. But I certainly would like to see it. I'd like to see it come back and progress. Although we're going to certainly keep it alive. I got a call in, and this might be Joe. Who am I speaking with?
This is Joe.
Oh, yeah. Hi there.
Yeah,
hi there,
this
gracious
is Joe.
Lady. Yeah.
Hi.
Gracious lady, I'm gonna ask you a couple of leading questions here and then let you just explain things to us. First, let's talk about your film and both your films, you know, because I think that's what we want to really get across is this wonderful DVD that you did. Would you talk about that and let us know how to get it?
Well, sure. Thanks for asking. I made a film called Dancing with Gaia, which is a feature-length film, which was really inspired by Farfaria and by Fred Adams. I started out by interviewing him, and he encouraged me to go off and interview a whole lot of other people, especially women, about the topics of earth energy and sacred sexuality and the return of the goddess. So I did that, and at his urging, I went to a lot of sacred places throughout Europe and the Mediterranean and across the U.S. as background to, kind of illustrate what people were talking about. And the film is available at our website, which is GaiaDancing.com. The other film that you may, and I just had mentioned, Polk, I'm internet challenged at this time, so I was not able to hear what you said just prior to me calling. So if I repeat something, just let me know. But I made a film in the 70s about Farfaria, and it's called Farfaria, A Dance for the Goddess. And this is a short film, just a 20-minute film. And it shows Farfaria celebrating four of the big seasonal celebrations, two solstices and two equinoxes. And to connect them, there's a one-year-long time-lapse shot of wilderness going through seasonal changes. And then some really beautiful imagery that Fred came up with, original art showing the essence of each season. So that my plan on that is I think I'm probably going to put that up on YouTube with some links from the Farfaria website, yet to be created, but soon, and also from my own website, the GaiaDancing.com website. So people will be able to see that pretty soon. I should think within about a week or two that should be available.
Oh, that's really wonderful. By the way, that particular film I know we all helped with that, and I'm not going to point out where to look, but I can look and spot myself in the background in a few places there, and all of us, and remembering all of the old Farrafarians. And I remember that you had us up for the winter sequence. You had us up in Chileo, and oh my gosh, it must have been about 15 degrees up there, and our noses were all red. What?
It was literally snowing.
I know, and our noses were red. You could see. And but we were, we still have some of those old blue robes, because you remember you came up with the costumes for it,
right.
And
we had
purple. We still have some of the purple robes. We still have some of the old blue robes from the Chileo from the winter ceremony. We still use them. And now I'm so glad to hear that original film will be available again. The only other place that's been anybody's seen that is on the Tom Snyder Show in the 1974 and 1975 Halloween Tom Snyder Show. You showed clips from that. And I think we've circulated that around the internet. That's available.
Right.
The Tomorrow Show. Yeah. And Joe, you want to tell us, if you will, tell us about the library and how this all came about and how you set it up and whatever. I think that was just fascinating.
All right. Yeah, I'll be happy to talk about that. Fred was an avid reader, and actually it was the books that got him inspired in the first place. He'd been reading since he was a teenager, really in-depth stuff, not just stuff that was current and popular in his own time, but he managed to get his hands on some of the amazing books that had been written, like hundreds of years earlier, and sometimes, reprints of those books. The Secret Commonwealth of Elves, Fauns, and Fairies comes to mind, which was written in the early 1600s by a Scottish reverend, and really is a classic work on identifying what fairies are and how to find them and how to interact with them. And it's amazing that it was written that long ago, and it's so good. And I think it was actually recently reprinted, but he had a very old copy of that. And then, of course, there were the books that were the most important books for him, like the White Goddess and, the Great Mother, the Golden Bough, books like that. And I want to talk about some of those specific books a little bit more later on, but just to kind of give an idea. So he was reading all these books, and he collected them. And after, I guess, a few, bad experiences, he decided, well, I want to really keep this collection intact. So he stopped lending them out, and he kind of kept them all very carefully and covered them up with plastic. And as a result, we've got these beautifully intact copies with perfect covers of these books that are, like, some of them are 50 years old. And so I was able to provide a space to house the collection, and we worked it out that it would come over to me to caretake it. And what we have here on our property is a building that was a modified, we call it a gypsy wagon, because when you look at it, it looks like something the gypsies would have traveled in and lived in. It's got a cute little peaked roof and, kind of stained glass windows around the sides, and very all handmade, and in fact it was handmade by a person who lives here in the Bay Area and was leaving the country, and he sold it to us, and we modified it a lot and created this beautiful library out of, full of bookshelves from floor to ceiling. But there's still plenty of space to sit in there and meditate and read books and kind of absorb the information. And the goal with the library, what we really want is for sincere seekers to be able to come and look at these same books and get the same types of inspiration, which were so important to Fred that they ultimately moved him to have a life-changing revelation of the goddess in 1956. That really, after that, his life was dedicated to the goddess, celebrating the goddess and bringing the idea of the goddess forward for other people, both in ritual and in art and in his writings. So we created the physical library, and we got all the books organized. I mean, there's almost 1,500 volumes, so it was a huge task, and I had a lot of help. Richard Bradshaw deserves a mention there because he was very, very helpful in organizing the library. And then just like I think it was about 2 weeks ago, we had our gathering, and you were there, Polk, and we all got together and celebrated the library and sort of inaugurated and blessed it and dedicated it to its future as being a home for, you know, a center of Fariferian culture and thought and, well, books. So that was a real magical little ceremony. You know, it was in the full moon, the night of the full moon, starting right at twilight. And we did some singing and some dancing, and we, you know, danced around the circle. And we had a nice crystal that had been absorbing the moon's rays and the sun's rays for 24 hours before we started. And then we picked up the crystal and channeled energy into it and buried it right there underneath the gypsy wagon so that it can just continue to send that energy up out into the surroundings and into the building and the books and the space. And I will say one thing. I can describe the ritual in more detail, but one thing I really noticed for several days afterwards, and especially right after the ceremony, was we have a little stone circle there in the yard right in front of the gypsy wagon, and the stone circle was just, to use Fred's words, tingling and streaming afterwards, and it was really intense and beautiful, like a magnetic place to be after the ritual. And this lasted for a number of days, and it sort of faded away. Now it's still nice to look at, but it was really charged up by the ritual we did.
I agree with you there. It certainly was, and the Wiccans talk about raising a cone of power. Well, this was somewhat similar to that kind of an experience, because with that dance that you had us doing around the circle, that really worked, and it charged the whole circle, and I was just glowing. I felt like we were really, really, really connected. And it was a wonderful, wonderful job of putting that all together and getting it to work. And I just really I can't thank you enough. It just let me. Oh, and then too, I want to mention that the next day we went up. Or was it the day before? I forget. When we went up to that wonderful. That mountain, well, hill, that hill.
Minoan maze, right.
Can you tell us about that? Because that was really an experience.
Yeah, well, that maze is really cool. Some people here in our town built it, and there's open space a lot around where we live. And so up there on this open space, they created with a lot of stones this maze, quite large. I think it's probably 40 or 50 feet across. And, you know, in the Minoan sort of style. And it's up in a place where you can see a lot of hills in the distance, really, really good view of the local mountains and so on. And so we went up there, you know, our group did, and, you know, processed into the center slowly of the maze. And, you know, as you process in, you kind of turn left, and then you turn right, and then you turn left, and then you turn right. And there's only one way to go. It's not like a mystery you're going to get lost in it type of maze. It's a unicrossal maze. There's one way to get in and one way to get out. But what you do as you go into the maze is you're turning in a balanced way, first one way and then the other. And you get a different view each time you turn, and it kind of sets up this alternating pattern in your physical body and also in your eyes and in your mind of where you are, because you're looking here and then you're looking there and then you're looking here. And each time you look at it, you're seeing a similar view from a slightly different place as you go towards the center of the circle. So you get a different feeling about it because you're getting kind of closer to this place that feels like a place of origin, like an omphalos or a sacred center. And it's a very meditative experience. It can be a fun or joyful experience. You can sing or you can dance as you go in to any of these mazes, but most people will walk slowly and get into the meditation of it and noticing these turns as they go, how it kind of tends to balance the left and the right and the yin and the yang in the body. And then by the time you get to the middle, you're feeling very centered, really, I mean, on many levels. So we hung out in the center of the maze and pondered the centerness of it and the view around, and that was a real nice experience.
It was a very nice experience, and of course, we got some. I know that Zandria got some good panoramic views on her camera equipment, and I don't know whether we posted them, any of them or not, but that hilltop gives you it's a 360-degree view that is just amazing. You're looking around San Francisco Bay, and you all up into Northern California, and you can see all the hills, and then there's a storm rolling in, and remember that, and that in itself was the storm waited for us to do it, but then we have this front moving in and out. It was really a wonderful experience, and
it was very dramatic.
Yeah,
and then also when we were doing the dedication ceremony for the library, you may recall that as we were calling on the Fae, the great Fae, to join us in the circle, there was a wind, like a breeze, that just came as if in answer to our call. And that was really, it gave you that tingle,
Oh, the whole thing was just beautifully, magically charged. And I just felt really like you got the current of Ferraferia certainly going well. I don't think it ever stopped, but you got it. If it was dormant, you certainly revived it. That was really great.
I think everything needs to be reinvigorated once in a while.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, one of the things I wanted to mention that Ferraferia is primarily Fred based it on the Eleusinian mysteries of ancient Greece. And he connected this as just one of his mentors, Robert Graves, had done. He connected the Eleusinian mysteries and the Greek and the Orphic traditions with what little we know of the Druidic tradition. Robert Graves certainly thought that the Druids were definitely connected to the ancient Greek mythology. So Fred, I thought when I first met Fred, I thought, my gosh, this guy's a Druid. Well, Fred didn't really like to call himself a Druid because, who knows what a Druid is, even though there are a lot of people that say they're Druids, but we know so very little about that tradition. Fred definitely made this connection from the Greek, the ancient Greek, all the way up through the European and to the British Druidic and fairy tradition, and tied it all together. And he tied it together in a very elegant and a very scholarly and a cultured sort of way. One of the things about Ferraferia, that you said in your little precis here, that this is wilderness mysteries with fairy style, courtly elegance, refinement, and grace. And that describes it. This was magic for people the kind of people who enjoy grand opera and the kind of people who really this is something that can be appreciated by cultured individuals and also by people who just have a good intuition to realize it. But I felt when I first met Fred and Svetlana, I don't know whether I told you, but I was ready to give up. I've been looking, I had my vision of magic and all that, but I was looking around, all around Los Angeles area, trying to find somebody who I could consider a master. And all these people I ran into, that these occultists, I hadn't met Ligardi yet at that time, but these people are not educated. They don't know what they're. And then when I met Fred, oh boy, I realized now here is a man who has really dug in and gotten to the essence and the ancient wisdom. Now, did you have the same experience when you didn't you? I mean, you really knew because you were in college at the time, right?
Well, yeah, but I think the thing about Fred is that he's so deep that you can't get Fred without spending a lot of time doing it. It's just, I mean, that was the original reason that I made Farfaria Dance for the Goddess, was because I wanted to understand Farfaria, and I just couldn't figure out, I didn't even know how to ask the right questions to really get, you know, what Farfaria was up to. And I thought, well, if I make a film about it, then I'll finally understand it. And I have to admit that even though I made that film and I joined the group and was initiated, I still didn't totally get it. And I think that my later desire to make the film, which eventually became Dancing with Gaia, had to do with that same impulse. I felt there was so much there with Fred and with Svetlana and what they had created with Richard Stanwyck, all of them, that it needed to really be explained in a way that was clear enough that people could really get it, including me, you see. So, you know,
well,
that
Joe,
was the process
for me. Joe, honestly, I would not fall. Don't false yourself, because what Fred and Bob Elwood, of course, helped. Bob Elwood helped me and probably helped you and the rest of us understand Fred. Bob Elwood may have, in some ways, may have understood Fred better than Fred understood Fred. But Bob Elwood pointed out, and this is what I got the inspiration from Bob's idea here to base my whole master's thesis on this proposition. Fred and some of the other magicians of the more elegant of the pagan movement, Fred being the most elegant, was a resurgence of romanticism. This is what Fred was. He and Svetlana both. They were supremely romantic. And this was, they were reviving 18th century romanticism and the romantic philosophy. And which, you know, the romantic philosophy can best be defined as the divinity, the artistic divinity of the human soul, you know, the idea that people should aspire to something marvelous and wonderful and beautiful, and that we're divine. And I'm not saying that romanticism is always good, because it can be misused, and gosh knows it has been, and all of that. But romanticism, it can be described as artistic enthusiasm, and in a divine, mysterious sort of way. And that's what Fred was. He was romantic.
Yeah, he was. And he also understood the incredible power, spiritual power, of sublimated eros.
Oh, yeah. And he wasn't the only romantic to come up with that, but he did it in such a way that it was not at all, I don't think, personally, I don't think that his Fred's spiritual eroticism was in any way offensive or any way anything that could be denigrated. I thought it was beautiful. I think that that's another thing about his philosophy, that in his philosophy, eroticism and the physical love and all was a beautiful thing. He and Svetlana didn't see anything naughty about, well, in a playful sense perhaps, but to them love and the whole process of love was a thing of beauty and art. It was high art. And so, whereas, unfortunately, others have approached, especially in our culture approaches eroticism, for the most part, differently. And so this is one of the things that Fred elevated. You know, and this is in the classic romantic tradition, too. I mean, I remember Fred was fascinated by the fin de siècle period in the French occultists and the surrealist, the symbolist painters, you know. And again, of course, we haven't discussed Fred's artwork yet. We got to get into that. So why don't you kick on here? Tell us about Fred's artwork. Come on.
Well, okay. I was just getting prepared to launch into a different thing.
No. If you're prepared to launch into a different thing, tell me what you're prepared to launch into.
No, just because I think it's so important, I want to bring up that, yes, Fair Fairy is very much about the Eleusinian mysteries and the traditions of the ancient Ireland, you know, well, British Isles. However, it's also very much a fairy face, and we haven't really talked about that aspect of it. The very name, you know, it's Fera and Feria, which is wild and celebration, but it also intimates fairy. And when we open the circle and then call in the great phase, we are, in fact, calling in the great fairy face phase of all the directions, you know, who actually are the embodiments and the spirit of the land and the beings in the land around the particular place that we were in. And when we did the ceremony the other evening here at our place, you may recall that we identified every landform in all of the eight directions around us by name and description, and then we called in the fae, the great spirit of that particular landform, into the circle, channeled into the circle by the method of the person who's standing there in that part of the circle, bringing that being forth and bringing them right into the circle with us. And I think it was hugely powerful, and that had a lot to do with why it was such a great ritual for us.
Well, absolutely,
I just you know, want to share this. I've got this book that we're putting together, it's currently two volumes and about 800 pages long, but it's the Book of Fairfairia. It's being worked on right now, and that's a whole story. But as I'm looking through book two right now, the first titles of the chapters, the Path of Plants is the Way to Fairyland. And the next one is The Return of the Fairies. And the next one is Fairy Lore Notes. And the next one is One Basic and Simplified Form of the Fairy Ring Ceremony. So there's a huge emphasis on the fae in Fairfairia. And these pieces that I'm talking about are just, you know, beautiful pieces about the fairy fae that Fred's been writing on and, you know, creating within that tradition for, you know, many decades. So, yeah, just wanted to kind of bring that.
Well, no, I'm glad you did, because for a number of reasons, I'm glad you got that perspective. That's kind of what I meant when I said he extended the Greek Greek mythology and the Eleusinian mysteries over to Britain, because it's the fairy faith it's the fairy tradition in Britain that he's really, really working with. And of course, Evans once what was it? The fairy faith in Celtic
fairy faith
countries.
In the Celtic countries.
And, oh yeah, that and we've had recently, by the way, there has been more of a revival. Fred was trying to revive it, but more of a revival and interest in the British fairy tradition. In fact, there was a novel, it was very popular. I'm sure you heard of it. Mr. Strange and Dr. Norrell.
That's a wonderful book.
Oh yeah, well this is fairy tradition. And so we're starting to. And you remember the girls that were taking the that were taking the photographs of fairies, and even
yeah.
Houdini, you know, Houdini looked at them, and he said, "I'm not going to say they're fake." This fairy tradition in England is really, really extensive, and Fred was certainly into that. I remember Fred and Svetlana had a big fight one time, and I was over there at a quarter, and I was like, "Oh, come on, fairies, don't fight. but we definitely want to emphasize this, and I'm wondering if our friends the Silver Elves are listening to this. If they're not, they ought to be. And you and I both know right now, and I tried to get Fred into this, but he was getting a little too tired and a little too involved with taking care of Svetlana to do anything about it. There is a fairy movement going on here in the United States right now.
Oh, yeah.
And, oh, yeah, there's a fairy movie.
There's a huge
convention
called Fairy Worlds that gets together,
yep.
I think, twice a year, which, you know, sounds like a beautiful event. I haven't gone, but, I look at their, you know, their site on a regular basis. It looks great, and it looks like it's a real big popular event.
Well, we ought to somehow or other get them to realize that maybe fairies, what they might be looking for, because it certainly is the fairy faith. Absolutely, no doubt about that. And the connection, of course, to the hermetic aspect is the whole elemental. The elementals are the hermetic aspect of fairyland. You know, Corral, the Queen of the Silks, and Tijin, King of the Salamanders, and Gold, King of the Gnomes, and Nyxa, Queen of the Undines, and, you know, those. So the fairy tradition came down into the Hermetic tradition, too. And,
right.
Yeah, absolutely. The White Goddess, as we mentioned before, was one of the first books to really inspire Fred. I think it's that, and there was another one, and you can remember, what was this one about the orchard?
The Recovery of Culture, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that was
yeah.
By Henry Bailey Stevens back in 1949, and that book was kind of the message was that humankind is, and this is in the late 40s, remember, it was a long time ago, humankind
yeah,
is facing the abyss because it's frugivorous, which means fruit-eating, peaceful primate culture, which marked the eons of its pre-human development, has been overlaid by the domestication of animals, which he calls the primary evil. And he figures that, he writes that butchery, warfare, and the blood culture are the result of the domestication of animals. So that book has a great section in it where it talks about how it would be great to have a revitalized tree worship with pilgrimages to the graves of the ancients, folk dances in apple orchards, and joy without intoxication. Does this sound like Fera Fairy or what?
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, we should mention here that Fred and Svetlana were both vegetarians, very definitely.
Yeah.
And that was part of that. That was part of their belief system, and the orchard. The whole idea of it almost sounds hedonic or like the Garden of Eden. The whole idea is that fruit should be the natural food. According to Fairfarian philosophy, fruit should be the main stay of the human diet, and nuts, berries, fruit, and whatever. And they were the idea that the orchard would just keep us going, and we could literally return to paradise. So,
that's the key issue there. With the orchard gives so generously, like the human breast, it gives without harm to the tree, right? It gives, and so that's why it's so gentle and delicate and beautiful and sort of, you know, fairy-like, is because there's no harm done.
Yeah, and it also within certain I suppose you know, realistically you'd have to supplement all fruit would probably need to be supplemented with nuts and some other things, but essentially I don't see any reason why this wouldn't be correct. We had in anthropology, I know when studying the history of these various cultures, we came up with the cattle and battle formula. And in other words, if you raise cattle and you eat cattle, you will also steal cattle, and you will fight over cattle, and you go to war over cattle, and so you have this cattle and battle thing, and sure enough, if you take an anthropological view of it, it's true. I mean, the most violent people in the world have been cowboys.
That's really interesting, and that, I think you're really right about that, because there's a certain willingness, if you're raising cattle, you know, to eat them, right, you have to be willing to kill these really big animals, and in order to do that, you have to harden your heart, because they're going to look at you. They don't want to be killed. They're going to look at you, and you're going to have to figure out some way to put a wall between you and them in your mind and in your heart, and then you can kill them. Well, as soon as you've created that wall, you're willing to kill other people. And that was one thing I was really impressed, and not in a good way, with the discussion in another one of Fred's books, fabulous book called The Mystery Religions in the Ancient World by Jocelyn Godwin. That's a great book, and I really recommend it. And one of the points, one of the many great points that's made in that book, is that Isis, their sacrifices only involved milk, honey, and herbs. And that was different from all the other religions, because all the other religions were killing all these animals as sacrifices. And then Christ, when, you know, Jesus came along, he didn't want to have people killing on his behalf. But before that, and, you know, for a long time, Isis was the only divinity that said, no, you know, you don't have to kill on my behalf. But it sort of, everybody else was, you know, cutting up bulls and whatnot on a regular basis. It was very popular in that era.
Yeah, but take a look at the Cain and Abel story right there. Here's Cain and Abel, and you know, one of them has brings his choicest fruits of his harvest, and his brother brings the lamb, kills the lamb, and Jehovah is pleased with the blood of the lamb, but not pleased. And so the farmer kills the shepherd. Now, in there, when you think about I'm not a vegetarian, you know that. I would like to be. Let me put it this way. I would like to be, and I managed to quit smoking. And that was tough. I managed to quit smoking, and I even got my weight pretty much under control. But I don't know whether I'm ever going to be able to give up beef. But I sure would like to, because I believe philosophically. I believe philosophically that this is the way to go. I really do. So it's do as I say, do not as I do. And what here should we cover at this point? The artwork, yeah.
The artwork is phenomenal, and there have been several gallery, you know, showings of Fred's work. I've got one of his beautiful pictures on the cover of my DVD, Dancing with Gaia, right? And the Fair Faria website will have a lot of nice artwork by Fred on it. We're keeping as much as we can. Patricia has been really phenomenal with that, creating really high quality, really dense copies digitally of his various artworks. So that's a great archive that she's creating. I know that, you know, a lot of people have seen his work. Hans Holzer has had at least one, maybe a couple of his books have had Fred's artwork on the covers. And I think that there are some other books out there that also feature his work. It also showed up in a lot of magazines in kind of the 70s and maybe 80s. But it would be wonderful if it was all assembled at some point into a great coffee table book. I don't know. There's so much written material in the Book of Farfaria right now that if we added his artwork, it would be probably closer to 1,000 pages long, which might be more than we can do. But we'll certainly have some imagery in there, and I think that, you know, it will be beautiful because of that. He celebrated, most of his art was the goddess. It was the goddess here and the goddess there and the laughing goddess and the merry maiden and, you know, all the different aspects of the goddess, you know, the mother goddess, the, you know, young girl goddess, especially the young Cori goddess. That was his favorite. And the one that Farfaria most celebrates, of course, is the young maiden goddess.
Well, let me do a little promotion here on the Farfarian artwork that we do have available for those people who are interested and want to get introduced to it and all. You recall that we reprinted Nine Royal Passions of the Year. And as a portfolio of sacred art, and this is a 11 by 17 fold, kind of it's a folio sort of a thing, and this is, we're having a problem getting Amazon to figure out how to put it. It's available through Amazon, but you really have to dig around to find it because they don't know whether to classify it as a magazine or whether to classify it as a book or what. We put an ISBN number on it, the nine. Icons, they're like tarot cards. They're the nine icons for each Farfarian seasonal ceremony, the quarters and the cross quarters. And you've got those Star and Beltane and Midsummer and Lunisad and Harvest Home and Samhain and Repose. And we have Yule and Omelk. And we have a beautiful, beautiful kind of a tarot card like painting for each one of these. And then we have in Fred's own calligraphy, and Fred was very much like William Blake, you know, he liked to do his own calligraphy. And of course, he didn't want to use a typewriter. and he couldn't. Yeah. I remember you got him a computer and he just looked at it like it was some sort of alien rock that he didn't even want. Do anything with. But so we did this beautiful calligraphy and very much like William Blake. And that introduces each one of these tarot card like icons. So we have this, put this together. We put a $9.95 price on it. The ISBN number is 0977276-5-1-1. But it's called Nine Royal Passions of the Year, Portfolio of Sacred Art. And it's you can get it through Amazon or you can get it directly from us. And I might mention that we send out a copy of this free if you order the OTA Seasonal Ceremonies, our book. On the OTA seasonal ceremonies, you get Nine Royal Passions. If you order from us, you get Nine Royal Passions free. And the reason why we do that is, number one, we want to honor Farfaria because Farfaria certainly had an influence on our seasonal ceremonies. So it goes out. But I would like to get this out to some more people. And you have some on hand up there, don't you, that you can... I told you I'd send you another bunch of them.
I know you gave me a bunch of them, but finding them here in my home is its own personal maze.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, I'll send you some more when you need them. But I have them, and they're really, I think they're really, really beautiful. And anybody who is into Wicca or into any form of paganism, you really ought to have these. I mean, these define the sacred year for, they're very good for most of the Wiccan traditions. So I would really like to, you know, to indicate that we have them. Now, Fred, of course, said, oh, well, this isn't my best artwork and all that. Well, it's just true. He cranked them out a little too fast, maybe. But now I think they're charming. I think they're just beautiful. And we do have on the front cover and the back cover, we have more of Fred's artwork that's more carefully done. And so this is a good introduction to Fred's symbolic artwork.
They distill the essence of each of the seasonal ceremonies that Fairfairia does. And for people that are oriented towards the goddess and god traditions, where there is a pairing of the goddess and the god, it's a beautiful pageant that kind of shows how the earth goes through her seasonal changes and is renewed each year. And the other thing to think about, I mean, their artworks in and of themselves, but they would take place, you might say, in a circular fashion as the year goes around in its cycle. And Fred, another place that he put a lot of his juice when he was used to doing his art was creating these actual interlaced circles that would show all the connections between everything and everything. And what do I mean by that? Well, to explain it, I was just absolutely thrilled when I was going through this really, really old copy of The White Goddess that Fred had, you know, extensive liner notes in. I found a whole page where he wrote his own review of The White Goddess, and I just found this like 2 days ago, and I'm like blown away because it really distills The White Goddess, the most important part of it. And if I may, Oak, I'll just mention what he said in that review. Is that all right with you?
Oh, yeah, sure. I want a copy of that review, by the way.
Will be happy to send it to you. So what he says it's a work of inestimable importance. Okay, we know that he thought a lot of it, but this is what he says. He says its main concern is the linkages between sidereal, which means stars, right, botanical and zoological phenomena in a mythopoeic rendition of the cycle of the year. The mythological aspect is because, as such, the grand annual cycles clue the human psyche to its own progressive integration in relation to nature. This was the masterwork of European prehistory. It was epitomized in various calendar alphabets. So, these calendar alphabets, and this is what the White Goddess is about, right? This is what it's about, is that there's these alphabets that go way, way back, like the Ogham alphabet, like the tree alphabet, Les Lewis Nguyen. They serve these functions for ceremonial and celebrational self-inclusion in the annual round of the year by the human psychosome, the body and the mind, and for actuating and organizing poetic inspiration in keeping with nature so that all of the human responses remain in keeping with nature. The basic system Graves divines could be applied to any region to develop a community mode of communion with that region. So that's his review. Is that great?
Oh, that's beautiful. That's wonderful, and you know that really does actually capture the essence of it, because the tree alphabet in the White Goddess had the 13-month Celtic tree alphabet that Graves reconstructed, and of course that's reflected here in our nine royal passions of the year. You mentioned Fred's Heniosphere. That originally, that design came out of Paul Christian's History and Practice of Magic, out of that same one degree wrap up of Greta Rapoport or French version of Greta Rapoport that we used for the, you know, for our first OTA initiation, and then we went on to use it. But in there, you'll find that Enneasphere as supposedly as Cagliostro's Rose Cross, and Fred took that and what it is these circles, these eight circles that are interlaced, and he used that he did infinite numbers of these enneaspheres, and he used that to as a structure for all the correspondences, the Hermetic and the Greek mythological, and these correspondences. And along
right.
with the tree alphabet and everything else, and put it all together. And I don't know how many of these enneaspheres have we got with different symbols on them.
Countless. I would say countless.
They're wonderful. And,
I mean, there's a whole bunch
for,
of them in the book, you know. So to be honest, I haven't counted them. There's a whole lot of them. But with these enneaspheres, you look and you go, okay, here's where we are in the year right now. You know, here we are, Thursday, mm-hmm. August 4th, in what you know, what the calendar that we're using here. You find
yeah.
that on there, and you find out, you know, the name of the tree month that you were in, the day, you know, Monday through Friday, Saturday, whatever. They started with Saturday, with Saturn. And then the you know the tree month and then you know within the year so you're looking at the day of the week and the year as a set of circles within circles, each one having its own sacred aspect, and then you've got your vowels, the sacred vowels that go with each of those, and then which tree seems to epitomize and sort of be the signaling tree for that part of the year. You've got all these astrological and astronomical correspondences, and as he says, the botanical and zoological phenomena as well that fit with that particular part of the year. So all these things are called out. It's a great way to say, okay, now what am I going to want to celebrate today? What is the thing that's the most essence of today, of this particular moment in time? And it really is a way of bringing you present. There's a lot of people that talk about living in the now, but they aren't necessarily thinking about the full aspect of the now and how it relates to the sacred year and how this panorama of the seasons changes and what, you know, you might say the living earth or Gaia is actually doing at this moment. And this is a way to kind of, okay, oh, here's all these things that I can think about that I can celebrate.
Let's mention as we, to make sure everybody understands the depth and the breadth of this, that Fred was a very, very good astrologer. He was but Fred here again was a Renaissance type elective astrologer. So much of this that we're putting on these enneaspheres and tying into the tree alphabet is elective. In other words, this is do magic to get with the current and get with what's happening in nature. Fred was very much. In this sense, you know, I've mentioned a couple of times that Fred was really a hermetic magician in the sense that he was fully cognizant of all the hermetic systems and the entire hermetic proposition. What Fred did with his particular version of the hermetic system, he has above, so below, as within, so without idea, was to tie it into nature and the seasons and the whole process of the earth and our relationship with the earth. And so many times and of course, you know, it's one of the things that you can take hermeticism this direction, or you can get transcendental with it and go off and just say, oh, I don't care about the earth, I'm just interested in you know, the heavens. But with Fred, this was tying everything in to your own life. And as you just said, if you want to live just for today, for the moment, where are we right now, astrologically? Where are we seasonally? Where are we? Where are we traditionally? What is the moment? What is the What is, where are we? What are the tides, you know, of, I think it's just wonderful. And I know Fred and I used to go hiking, you know, up in the mountains, and he knew every plant, he knew every, I can't even begin to remember all the plants that he tried to teach me, you know, and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He was completely, he had landforms. And then he got into the feng shui, and he got into the Chinese, the Taoist idea of dancing the stars. Did you know about that?
Well, he did talk about that. I kind of got it. He certainly demonstrated it for me, and I shot him, you know, there's actually a little clip in Dancing with Gaia that shows him doing some of his, where he put the pole down and danced around the circle and kind of watched the horizon go by from, you know, centering on the circle, on the pole in the middle of the circle. So, you know, I was aware of that part of it. About the stars, I'm not so sure.
Well, you know, that was a phase he went through, and he sent me a lot of that material because he was really fascinated by it. The Siberian shamans started doing this before the Taoists picked it up, and the Buddhists apparently never did bother with it too much. But the idea of connecting the constellations to the Earth, and by doing this, you lay out the constellation on the ground, and then you dance the constellation.
Mm.
Fred was for about a year, he was really, really into this too, and he integrated that into the system. But
well, I
know
that we have in the book his topocosmic maze dance, and that is the path that the moon traces. If you take a fixed position, such as, you know, the moon, how it rises and sets, and how that changes. You know, the rising and setting point changes throughout the year as the year goes by, right? So there's this meander that's somewhat spiral in appearance that goes back and forth that is what he calls the topocosmic maze dance, and you can actually lay that down, draw it out, you know, in the middle of your circle, and then dance it.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I have here in our temple over in Rivendell, I have the cosmic tuning dial, you know, that wonderful three-disc cosmic tuning dial for the, and then on top of that, of course, I have the dodecahedron.
Right.
You know, you remember the dodecahedron. This was Fred and Jim Ordonius put a lot of work into that. That's Plato's version of the celestial sphere, and it's... that thing is really, really quite a piece of work. So it has these pentagons, and it's as I recall, it's nine pentagons, and they're all glued together. And it's kind of like if the pentagons were made out of leather, and you sewed them together, and you pumped it up. It would be a sphere. That's the sort of the analogy. It's a crude analogy,
right.
So it was Plato's version of the celestial sphere. And Fred and Jim put all the stars and the Milky Way and everything on it. And we got that. We have that. We're using that for our sixth degree altar. That's the astronomous. Portion in Kratupola. So I'm really, you know, in many, many ways, I just never stop learning from Fred. I mean, Fred,
yeah.
Because we're still learning from Fred, you know, Fred's...
We absolutely are still learning from Fred.
Oh, yeah. We're just learning from Fred. We keep learning, and there's all these stacks of stuff and all these books, and we're just learning from Fred, and we can keep on learning from Fred for the next couple of lifetimes, probably. I think Fred was there's just no doubt about it. This was a Western master. I mean, this was, and we really do. We need to make sure that Fred is properly remembered as a Western master, and I think you've just done a wonderful job keeping it together, getting those two books together, And, of course, we have to get those eventually. We have to get those in shape to publish, at least in some form to where they'll, you know, to where they'll be available for people who need them.
I think that you're absolutely right, and I want to just kind of put this out there because there might be somebody out here who kind of is listening to this and going, this sounds like my path. And if there's somebody out there that kind of is like saying that to themselves, they can actually email me, and you know, I've got a couple of easy-to-remember email addresses, and one of them is farahfaria@earthlink.net. And the reason I'm mentioning my personal email address there, well, personal for the organization, is that I really am actually seeking people who feel called to help out with the book, because we have a lot of material that's handwritten, and it's such a huge book. There's so much that needs to be digitized, and some of it's, you know, partly typed and partly handwritten. And it's just a process, you know, you actually have to type it into a computer and then it becomes something that can be emailed back to me. So if somebody wants to be involved in the book and is sincere in this, I'll go ahead and send them some material, some Xeroxes, and they can go ahead and type it up and email it back to me, and then it can become part of the book, and I'll be happy to give them credit for having helped out. And that would just be a wonderful thing if people wanted to help out that way, because it's a big book, it's a huge project, and it's a really important project, so...
I really encourage people to do this, and you know, I think that there are tribes. I think there are tribes out there in internet land, internet radio land, or whatever. We got tribes out there. We have tribes of people who this would resonate with. And people like that fairy, that the fairy movement. Maybe there are people in the fairy movement who want to get a little deeper than just the surface. Maybe they want to find out what the mystique behind all of this really is. And maybe they want to share it. Maybe they want to develop themselves along these lines. I think these people should realize that this. Farahfaria is a whole universe that resonates to this wonderful music. If you think of this as a universe that resonates to this musical tone, if this musical tone strikes you. If you think these people are talking about something that I really feel I would like to know more of and I would really like to get involved, please, please contact Joe, because, you know, this is a wonderful thing. This is a beautiful thing. And this is a real master that, you know, this is a real Western master that you can be part of this tradition. So get a hold of Joe on that, very definitely. And get a hold of us and get a copy of Nine Royal Passions. At least we can get that to you, and that'll be something. Joe, I just really I thank you so much for calling in, and remember now make sure that they know about the guy. Let's for those, get your pencils ready, folks, and let's write down the websites and everything. So to get your film, your feature length film, Dancing with Gaia.
Yes.
Now, what's the website on that?
Okay, so that's at GaiaDancing.com, and I'll spell that GaiaDancing. So it's GaiaDancing.com, and you can see the trailer for the movie there, and you can see photos of, you know, the people that participated and little bios of everybody, including Fred and all the other people that are interviewed in the movie. The movie itself, if you buy it, you can buy it there at the website. It comes with a marvelous little 48-page booklet that's illustrated with some of Fred's wonderful artwork and has a lot more in-depth stuff about how to use the techniques in the movie. The movie is about earth energy, sacred sexuality, and the return of the goddess as Gaia. There are, you know, techniques within the movie for how to really do this, how to connect with the living earth and experience that as part of your own larger body. And then the book goes into, you know, some more detail on that. So that comes packaged right in there with the movie. Then if you want to reach me directly, you can either type info@GaiaDancing.com or Farifaria at earthlink.net. And I'm going to spell Farifaria, Farifaria. So that's Farifaria at earthlink.net. And, feel free to give me a little line. I'm internet challenged today and for a few more 4 days, but I'll get all my mail in about a week. Just kind of a snafu happened on the technical end here, and we're temporarily down. But we'll be back up soon, and I'm looking forward to getting this website going. We're going to feature a lot of the rituals and the art in the website and bits from the book. And then eventually within less than a month or a couple of weeks, I'll be able to put up this other movie, the short film that you can see for free on that website, which is Farifaria, A Dance for the Goddess. So, yeah, thanks for, you know, having me on the show, Poke. I really appreciate it. It's been a real pleasure, and, you know, I hope that...
Well, Joe, I think you're the hope of Farifaria right now. I mean, you really have done a wonderful job, and I can't tell you how much we enjoyed coming up there and doing all that with you and sharing that with you. And I just hope very, very much that we can. Well, we're gonna do one Farifarian ceremony a year at least. By gosh, whether we do it up there or down here or whatever, we're gonna do it. And like I said, if you want, you folks want the 9 Royal Passions of the Year, and get a hold of me at P.O. Box 403, Silverado, California, 92676. That's the Church of the Hermetic Sciences. You send us check or money order for $10, and we'll send it to you priority mail, and we won't even charge you for the postage, and we'll get it to you. Thanks so much, Joe, and we'll be talking with you soon. I want to say that before we sign off tonight, that we will be back in 2 weeks. Sandra is going a big tournament, and so we're going to be off for 2 weeks. We'll be back on the 18th. We'll be back on Thursday the 18th, and so we'll be seeing you then, and we'll have another big show, and we really appreciate everybody hanging on here with us. And don't forget to get a hold of Joe Carson and get that video and let's keep the fairy faith alive here. And Ebbery Corey, Awee-ya. And that is it for tonight, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Good magic.